welcome back to another episode of the Wonder Podcast, the podcast where we break down and review films all in one big unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend,
Kramer England.
Yeah, dude, we are we're doing The Naked Gun this week.
Yes.
from a director, Akiva Schaffer, I think executive producer Seth MacFarlane, a legacy sequel. I think it's a sequel.
Yeah, I think it's a sequel. I mean, he is Frank Drebin Jr., so he's the son. Yeah. So yeah, it's a sequel.
Yeah, it's directly in the same cinematic continuity.
Yes.
As the Naked Gun movies from the 80s, and I think maybe they even went into the early 90s. There's three of them. Yeah. These Naked Gun films.
2.5 and 33 1/3.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great names, by the way. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I feel like this movie is right up our alley because we were raised on I think we were born right at the tail end of the golden era of this kind of comedy.
Yes. Yes, we were. I think it really the Naked Gun movies, and then Leslie Nielsen did a ton of other movies like Spy Hard, Dracula Dead and Loving It, and then Mel Brooks had a bunch that were very absurdist, and we got a lot of those really, really good ones.
Airplane 2, Spaceballs,
which Spaceballs 2 is coming out, which hopefully is funny, but then you get Scary Movie and Scary Movie 2 and 3 and 4, kind of, and then at that point you get I can't even remember the two guys who kind of took over this genre, but they kind of tanked it into the ground.
Yeah, the Wayans sort of revitalized this kind of joke a minute, spoof, silly comedy genre, and they had their own, I think, decidedly more adult spin on it. Where I mean, even though it was still catered toward it was perfect for us as teenage boys, but it was a little bit more raunchy than maybe the Zucker Brothers films had been. But the Wayans still were doing that style of comedy where it's like you're spoofing a bunch of different films and you're just sort of machine gun firing jokes at the audience. And they did it pretty well for Scary Movie and Scary Movie 2. Then there was that whole period in the 2000s with the oversaturation of not another teen movie and epic movie and superhero movie and
disaster movie and vampires suck and Meet the Starving Spartans. Games. And and it was these guys, Jason Friedberg and Aaron Seltzer are the ones that kind of seem to run it into the ground, unfortunately, but it seems to be back. Well, we'll see if it's back, but at least it's back in this movie.
Yeah, so as always, we will do a spoiler-free kind of breakdown of what we thought about The Naked Gun without telling you too many of the details. Not that there are many plot details you even need to concern yourself with in a movie like this. The question is just is the movie funny or not? Yeah. Are the jokes good? Do they seem to get the style or not? But yeah, we'll do our spoiler-free section first, and after that, we'll get into some spoilers. But so, Kramer, what were you just saying, your spoiler-free thoughts on The Naked Gun?
Spoiler-free thoughts. I loved the movie. I thought it was really funny. I saw it last night. I was in a theater that everybody was laughing, which is great when you can just kind of laugh with everybody and it just kind of keeps that mood going. And I thought there were a ton of jokes that landed, a lot of jokes that didn't, but honestly, the ones that didn't land were still pretty funny. There are a few that weren't as great as the others. I think that one of the things that I was most happy with is that the best jokes were not just in the trailer.
Right.
There were a lot of jokes that were great that were in the trailer, but there were so many more that I was like, oh, this is awesome. I'm so glad that they didn't just give away all the best jokes. So I laughed. I think comedy is extremely subjective. There's going to be a lot of people who don't like this, which is fine. But if you like Airplane, if you like Anchorman, if you like Scary Movie, if you like those type of movies, you will like this, I feel like.
Yeah, it was definitely a nostalgic ride for me because it did feel like from early on in the film that Akiva Schaffer gets this style.
Yeah.
And that the writing team and that everybody did their homework and they understand how to do this style correctly.
Yes.
And I agree with you. At the end of the film, I probably thought 70% of the jokes hit with my audience and got like a big laugh out of like most of the people in the audience. And in a movie like this, that's a really good batting average there's like 10 to 20 jokes per scene, you know? And the scenes are short. And so it's like every scene has like 10 to 20 big kind of bits in it. And it's, if you're hitting it like 70% or even like 60% in a movie like this, it's pretty good, you know? And honestly, as dumb and as silly as these movies are and always have been, that's sort of, as an audience member, like you kind of need to agree to buy in to what the style of the film is. If you're going to be, you could absolutely watch a movie like this and just go, this is so stupid. Why does anyone think this is funny? But the movie knows it's stupid. The movie's not pretending to be anything other than what it is. And I think it's sort of fun when the fun thing about this style of film always has been that it's like, we're not trying to do anything other than just put a smile on your face. We're not trying to do anything other than have a silly goose time and just like you're watching a movie that should look like the people who made it were having so much fun when they made it. Because they were just goofing off and they were just doing bits and they were just coming up with silly gags to do. And it always looked like that in the old Leslie Nielsen movies. It always looked like everyone on set must have just, like, you know, like when there's these scenes of him like climbing over OJ Simpson in his bed and like putting his butt in OJ Simpson's face and stuff. Like, I'm just like, I bet you anything while they were shooting some of this stuff, like the physical comedy and the physical gags, people were just like dying laughing on set, you know, and trying to keep a straight face. It's like so much of the comedy is based in how Leslie Nielsen and Liam Neeson in the new version play it really straight. And I'm sure there's a lot of cut gags of them trying to deliver something really straight faced and breaking or someone else laugh, you know? And I think so for me, it's like the movie worked on that level. I was nervous about this movie when we covered this in our predictions for big movies of 2025. I was nervous because I was like, are they going to get it? This style is trickier than people think. Yeah. And that era that we mentioned of, you know, Not Another Teen Movie and Epic Movie and Meet the Spartans and all that stuff showed how wrong this style can go. Like that it really can just become stupid jokes that aren't funny, that don't land. And if your batting average in a movie like this is gets down below 50%, if you get down to like 40 or 30 or 20%, which is what where a lot of those movies live, it's like a painful experience to watch a movie like this where the movie's trying so hard to make you laugh every scene and it's just not landing anything. And it just feels uncomfortable to watch the actors be forced into these situations that are so like ill-conceived and just sort of, and every joke kind of gets reduced down to like farts and stuff. Not to say that like a Naked Gun movie is above a fart joke. It is not.
No.
Like these movies never have been.
It wasn't. No.
It's just, you need to pick your moments of when you go to the bottom of the barrel, little kid pee pee poo poo jokes, which these movies have. And when you do like a fun word play, or when you do a fun bit of physical comedy, or when you do, you know, just like something completely unexpected that comes out of left field that, you know, I think this movie had all of those and landed at least one of those in a big way at different points in the film. So for the most part, it worked for me. I will say this in a general spoiler-free sense. The plot of the film, I just rewatched the original Naked Gun, the first one, and the plot of the film structure-wise and beats-wise is almost the exact same plot. And I think it's very likely that Akiva Schaffer was trying to make a commentary there too about legacy sequels and about, you know, unoriginality and things like that. But I was a little bit weirdly disappointed by that. I was just kind of like, oh, I was hoping this film would have more of its own thing going on plot-wise. But again, the plot doesn't really matter in a movie like this. It's just like, are the jokes working? And for the most part, I felt like they were.
Yeah, I agree. And I see exactly what you're talking about. I actually, that there's a big part of this movie that borrowed from another movie that we'll talk about that I was kind of like, well, this is just the plot of that movie. which I was also a little disappointed with. But
oh, like I know, I know which movie you're talking about, and it's like exactly the same thing.
It is, and I was like, "Wow, yeah. That's surprising. That's the exact same thing." So
yeah,
but we'll get into that in spoilers. But overall, I mean, like you said, I was there for the jokes. The jokes landed for the most part. I had a great time. Really funny stuff, and they did some of the traditional stuff that they do in the Naked Gun movies. So very happy overall.
Yeah, yeah, it was a good time. I was smiling pretty much the entire movie. My theater was laughing. My theater was buying in. It was nice to be in a theater in this day and age, watching a movie like this that felt like the comedies that I was raised on, being nearly 40 years old and being like, I still find this very funny.
Yeah.
And a lot of the bits were still surprising me. And you're right. I'm glad they weren't just all in the trailer. I also was a little bit just like, I'm annoyed at how many great jokes were in the trailer, because they would happen in the movie and I'd be like, man, I wish I didn't know that one already. You know, I don't know. And I don't get how you do a trailer for a movie like this and don't.
Yeah.
You like, they knew that they needed to sell people like you and me on, don't worry, guys, we got it. Don't worry, you know. And so the trailers definitely did do enough to make me feel like they might be able, they might be able to get this right. And you know, so I get why they had to do it that way. But those are our spoiler free thoughts. If you want to hear our complete thoughts, go over to our other video where we're going to do the full length breakdown, which we will do now.
Right now.
I don't think that we need to do like a full plot.
No. Synopsis
like we normally do.
There's so many jokes in this movie that there'd be no way for us to. First of all, after the opening scene, I was like, I don't even think I'm going to remember half of these jokes.
No, I knew. Which, I knew so early on. I was like, if we try to do a plot synopsis, it's mostly just recapping which bits happened and which scenes.
Yeah.
But there's so many, there'd be no way to, you know.
Not even close. But I mean, the opening, which is, this is what I thought was going to be the opening. It's the opening of the teaser where there's a bank robbery and he comes in on, you know, dressed like a little girl. And then he takes off his mask and it's Liam Neeson. It was just as funny in the trailer as it was in the movie. And then there are these added parts, which, you know, he like takes somebody's gun and he undoes it. And then the next person pulls a gun and he grabs it and he just crushes it. And then the next guy comes and he bites it off.
They're making fun of the whole thing of like how, you know, guys in spy movies are always really good at dismantling guns really fast. But he just keeps breaking their guns in different ways. I also really, I immediately loved the gag of grabbing a bad guy and having the bad guy be a
dummy.
A dummy. And I was like, that's classic, like Hot Shots and Naked Gun gag is like having like a really obvious dummy. And I love that he's just holding this dummy when they're shooting the dummy. And then he throws the dummy into a circle of bad guys and they all shoot each other.
they all kill each other. Like, they all die.
I also like that the first kind of like Naked Gun gag of the film is it's all taken like pretty seriously, this opening sequence, and it felt like the opening of The Dark Knight or something. You know, it's a bank robbery.
Okay, I was gonna say the score in this movie is awesome. I'm sorry if I'm not pronouncing that correctly, but I think he composed it or something, and it sounded very much like The Dark Knight. I'm pretty sure that was intentional.
Yeah.
But even like thinking of listening to this outside of the movie, I was like, this is a great score.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons that these movies work is, like you said, how serious they take it. So casting Liam Neeson in this role, I think, was brilliant because Leslie Nielsen was also a dramatic actor that came in and started doing comedy, and it just works so much better when you have a straight man who's playing it straight. And like, same with Liam Neeson, he is playing it straight for the joke. Like, he knows what the joke is. But I read that they were going to remake this in like 2009 with Ed Helms. And I was thinking, you know, I love Ed Helms. Hilarious. Really, really great comedic actor.
Yeah. But not the right vibe.
Yeah, when you bring in a comedic actor, it's going to be played differently because we're already expecting them to be funny.
Yeah, even like a Steve Carell or something. Like, it doesn't, it just like, it doesn't work quite as well as doing the thing where you're already kind of making fun of the career of Liam Neeson too.
Yes.
While, yeah. You know, yeah.
Yeah. And, like, you're making fun of a lot of his Taken movies and all these, right. Which, like, that's what works so well. So when you play these movies straight, like, and you have these, you know, out of character, against type actors playing these characters, it just seems to work a lot better. Now, that's, you know, you get Paul Walter Hauser, who's a comedian, and that worked. You get some other comedians in there, and those work as well. But
well, yeah, it's not a cast that's full of like Andy Samberg,
yeah,
and like,
yeah,
Kristen Wiig. Like, in fact, most of the principal cast are people who are not typically in movies like this.
Yes.
You know, like Danny Houston's the main bad guy. His yeah. main henchman is, I can't remember that actor's name, but he was the main
Kevin Durand.
Yeah, he main bad guy in Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. He plays the, you know, the king ape.
Yeah, who he did awesome.
Yeah, he was great in that movie.
Yeah.
And like most of the actors in the principal cast are not, you know, traditionally comedic actors. And that was smart on their part to cast it like a film in this genre, like this cop, you know, action cop thriller genre, and don't cast it like a comedy. That's really, yeah. But I like Kevin Durant early on. He's walking through the bank robbery and he blows up this safety deposit box and opens it up and he pulls out this MacGuffin and it just says on it plot device.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, nice.
Yeah. I was like, I love it. I thought it was going to say MacGuffin.
Yeah.
But it does say plot device, which was really funny.
Yeah. And plot is like
it's a stupid anagram or
acronym.
Acronym that they, it's like, it was like purely so that they could do the joke, which I thought was hilarious. And Danny Houston, I thought was absolutely hilarious in this movie.
Yeah.
Not really trying to be funny at all.
No.
But he was kind of the surprise for me, especially in the end.
Yeah.
But did you work with Danny on Horizon?
I did. Yeah. Danny, my first day ever on set was in a scene with Danny, Michael Rooker, Will Patton, Sam Worthington, and Luke Wilson, and Kevin directing. And I was the only person in the room who wasn't famous. And we're all like sitting in the room, like rehearsing. And I remember just like looking around the room and being like, what room am I in right now? I was like,
that's awesome.
What is going on? But then Danny was a hell of a guy. And I got to have dinner with Danny several times and talk to him about, you know, growing up with his dad, who is a very famous filmmaker, John Huston. And,
that's right. That's right. Yeah.
And, you know, talk to him about, I have this book, that a woman that I'm friends with out here, she used to be a pretty famous photographer in the 60s and 70s. And she took a lot of photos of a lot of people who were famous around that time. Candidly, like she would just hang out with them. And she had like all these unseen photos of like them at their houses. And she had this photo of Angelica Houston getting ready to go on a date with Jack Nicholson. And I told Danny about that photo. I was like, I have this book that has this photo of your sister getting ready to, and he was like, oh, you're kidding me. He's like, really? I was like, yeah. And I was like, according to the story in the book, it's like one of their first dates that they ever went on.
Oh, no way.
My friend took a photo of her like getting ready to go on the date. He was like, oh wow. And he was telling me about how he's like, I was pretty young when that was going on. And he's like, and I just thought my sister dating Jack Nicholson was the coolest thing in the world. And he's like, because Jack was like the coolest guy in town. And I was just it was cool. Anyway, Danny had great stories.
I bet. And I love Danny Houston. Like he's such a subtle actor where he can play these extremely menacing, scary characters in you know, serious movies. And then he plays this character. And I was like, I was expecting Liam Neeson to be funny, which he was. Yeah. He was hilarious. But like Danny Houston, I never saw him in the trailers. And, you know, he just wasn't featured in the trailers that much. And I think I got the biggest laugh out of one of his lines when in the end they have their big fight. Liam Neeson and Danny Houston have their big fight. And he's like, I don't even remember what they're talking about, but he's like, all right, time to start the fight, you know? And he like does this horrible, horrible punch and a horrible kick.
Yeah.
And Liam Neeson punches him in the stomach. And he's like, oh,
you punched me right
in the tummy.
He's like, you punched me right in the soft spot of my tummy. Ow, is that what fighting's like?
It was so funny.
And he's like, is that what you always do when you fight someone? He's like, yeah. And he's like, oh,
Liam Neeson, like, have you ever done this before?
He's like, no.
Of course I've done it before.
But then he's like, totally lying. He's like, do you want to keep fighting? He's like, no. He's like, yeah, that was really
good.
And
he's like, and then I went home. Yeah. I watched the movie, went home. My wife was in, I came in and Amy was just like, you know, sitting there and we were talking and just catching up on the day. And then I just started laughing because I thought of that scene and she's like, what are you laughing about? And I was like, just this dumb part in the movie. It was,
yeah,
but that was the funniest part. So I think, again, he's a serious actor. He's not a comedic actor.
Yeah.
They bring him in, they make him the, they make him the antagonist, and
like Liam Neeson and Danny Houston would be cast as the action hero and villain in a serious version of this film.
Yes,
100%.
It would be, absolutely.
Yeah. So that, I mean, yeah, it's very well cast. But yeah, obviously, yeah, Liam Neeson comes in. He's a little girl. He breaks it up. They have a really bunch of funny bits during the fight scene.
Yeah.
And then we do kind of the opening title sequence where he says, you know, Naked Gun, the new version, which is from the trailer. Yeah. And I thought this was funny too. I thought this was a clever gag because anyone who's ever tried to like make a poster before, if you've ever like tried to write something on poster board and you realize you didn't leave yourself enough space for the lettering, they do a funny thing where it says like the naked G and they're, they run out of space. And then you hear a voiceover go, ah, crap. And then they write UN underneath gun going down vertically.
Yeah, I thought that was a great gag too. Just like, I thought that was,
I was like, ah, crap. Like,
oh, crap. And then, you know, it has its sound effects because it's like flames and cool. Yeah, I thought that was pretty great.
We launch into the traditional sort of cop noir narrative that goes along with these films where they're making fun of the noir detective films that were always, you know, the narration's always really funny in these films. Like the Leslie Nielsen narration was always really good.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of funny gags with the narration in this film.
Yeah.
They do, you know, they continue the gag of Frank Drebin Jr. in this movie is always sort of like in his head thinking while he's driving around town and narrating things. And they do the gag. This is a gag in the first movie where every time he pulls up somewhere, he just like runs into things with his car.
And
doesn't notice, you know, like in one scene, there's a great scene in the original where he like crashes into something and his airbag goes off. Leslie Nielsen gets out of the car and then the car like drives away without him. And the airbags like fill the car and he's like, stop, thief. And he's like shooting at his own car. Did anybody get a look at the license plate?
But it's
like his car, you know, driving off. But I liked in this movie, you know, Liam Neeson's like driving to work and he's just kind of thinking and narrating and like people are like flying over the windshield. He's just like driving. He keeps
hitting people on bikes. Yeah.
I will say this. Here's the thing. This is a technical criticism that I have of this movie is one thing that these movies were always really good at in the 70s and 80s. So there's no excuse for us not to be even better at it now is these like the physical comedy bits, like this bit of like fighting with the dummy in the fight scene, which that worked really well. But a lot of these like Liam Neeson hitting someone with his car bits were done real close up. So you would just sort of see kind of like out of focus, like a body just sort of like wipe past the windshield, which was funny. But the way that they used to do it in the Leslie Nielsen days is they would actually have like a stunt performer, like get taken out by, and you would like see it. You would see like a person like roll over the whole car. And I kind of was like, I found myself on some of these physical gags wanting a wider shot where you could see more of the, but it's still played. Like the gag is still funny. You know.
I totally see what you're saying. I think that could have been fun. It probably honestly came down to like safety. Like, it's probably going to be cheaper and easier to do. And I actually, I did think it still landed, but that was funny. But yeah, he keeps hitting people. He keeps hitting things. He goes in and his boss, he goes into to police squad and everybody's so excited. And I mean, again, there's so many jokes in this, but his captain, she's all upset and she takes him off the bank job because he killed too many people. And he's like, when have cops ever followed the law?
he's like, when is it against the rules for cops to break the law? And she's like, since always. He's like, well, who's going to get me in trouble? Other cops? And she's like, yes.
Were they going to arrest me too? And is he serious?
But I also,
is she serious? Yeah.
And this is a carryover from the original films too, is they always talk about the fact that Leslie Nielsen's character is just like a terrible cop and also a terrible person. Yeah. And he's always just talking about how like he just kills people all the time because it's just part of his job.
Yeah.
And I like in this movie how, you know, just like that they just play with the idea of police brutality being this sort of praised thing. Like he comes in and they have a banner for him that's like 1,000 bad guys killed. And he's like,
oh guys, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I also love the runner throughout the first, you know, probably half of this film of every time Liam Neeson and his partner, Paul Walter Hauser walk into a room, a crime scene, anywhere, somebody hands them a coffee.
Yeah.
And it's sort of
they throw away their old one and get a new one. And
that
comes in at the end too. Like they bring it back at the very end, but yeah, they have that. And she takes him off the case, so he's on collisions or something.
Yeah.
And then I think he goes and you see this in the trailer too. He's like, you know, hey, daddy, like, I really miss you. And like, everybody is crying about their dads. And then we see the O.J. Simpson picture and the one cop's just, no.
Do you think that there's more scenes with that cop and they were cut out of the film?
I wish there was. I don't know. I kind of wish he was a character in the movie.
I feel like with a movie like this, there's probably so much that doesn't make the final edit. I think when you're making a movie like this, you have to look at each other and say, we can't go over 90 minutes. And if we do, we can't go over 100 minutes. Like 100 minutes is like the max for a movie like this.
Yeah.
And I know from like, I wrote a show that's been playing all summer long at a theater in Salt Lake. Right. And it's similar to this style of show where the point of the show is just like muzzle velocity for jokes. Is like every scene just needs to have like joke, 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 joke. And I've watched the show now 3 different times with 3 different audiences. And I'm mostly okay with how the show is because every night, like 70 to 75% of the jokes land. And I'm like, cool.
Right.
If like with the amount of jokes we're telling, I'm happy with that amount. But also I know that in the writing process, we just had to cut out so much because when you're writing jokes that way, you just have like this list, just like every single scene you have like a million different gags you want to fit into the scene, and eventually you have to just go, we got to make this shorter because it's comedy, and comedy needs to be quick and tight, and it needs to keep moving, and it, you know. And so I wonder if there was more with this character that's O.J. Simpson's son, and they had to just, you know. Because I also like, there's a joke here that I thought they might tell that they never addressed, and I was kind of surprised. And it's that in the continuity of the cinematic universe of The Naked Gun, Frank Drebin doesn't have a son in the original Naked Gun movie, which I think came out in like 1988. Yeah. And that means that if Frank Drebin Jr. is the son of Leslie Nielsen and Priscilla Presley from 1988, he would be our age. He would be as old as you and me. He wouldn't be a man who's almost 70, Liam Neeson. And I thought at some point someone would like say that, would like bring up the fact that Frank, like, you know, like, and then someone would be like, you were born in 1990, and he'd be like, yeah, my parents, you know, like,
yeah,
it's just I thought they might make some kind of jab at that,
yeah,
but they didn't wind up addressing it, but no.
It definitely could have been, but also it's kind of like, whatever, we don't need to explain this, like, we're just gonna get into it, but
Liam Neeson in real life is probably like 15 years younger than Leslie Nielsen,
he's got to be around that, or
I'm not sure how old Leslie Nielsen was when he died, but
so he gets taken off the case. they go find this car wreck, and that's kind of what sets him. He finds a matchbook, and I did like
it's an electric car.
It's an electric car. You know, he kind of gets one clue, and then he's like, all right, I'm done here. And I did like this little claw joke that they had that picks up the car and then he drops the car.
I liked any time they found a way to do something that felt fresh. That didn't feel like a, because there were a lot of jokes that worked that I appreciated, but they were kind of retreads.
Recycled.
Of jokes that were from the original series. And I liked any time they found their own bits.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like even the coffee thing is sort of like a classic Naked Gun thing of like hands coming in from off screen.
Also the it is hard. I did like that as well. Whenever they could do something that was kind of all their own, but it's also hard with comedy because so much of it is like a huge majority of these jokes in this movie are puns. Like anytime anyone could use a pun, they used it.
Yeah,
which was like, you know, he's like, oh well, you can't fight City Hall, and he's like, yeah, it's a building. Right.
Yeah.
Like they did that throughout the entire movie, which I loved. But
UCLA?
It's also,
oh, yeah, I see LA
I see
every
day.
Oh, I see it every day.
Yeah, which is so those are like they're hilarious and they used it a lot, but also like you can't, it's a pun. You just that's just how
and again,
how
some of them work better than others. Some of them are absolutely, are real groaners, and some of them are the kind of groaner that like gets you and you're like, oh man, that's so stupid and that's funny.
Yes.
And it's all about the delivery. Because Leslie Nielsen was great at that. Leslie Nielsen was really good at someone like saying a word and him responding like, no, thank you. I don't, you know, like and you'd be like, oh geez, you like you didn't hear it till the response. And Liam Neeson also does a pretty good job of
He does a great job. Yeah.
Yeah. He goes back to police squad and that, I think this is when he meets Pam Anderson.
Yeah.
I liked this gag of them being like, hey, you know, there's somebody in your office waiting for you. And he looks through the window and sees the silhouette of like this femme fatale. And then when he opens up the door, it's just sort of like a mop and like,
it's like a coat rack or something.
Yeah. And then the camera pans over and she's in the same position, like slightly over in the room. But like, that's a good gag. I also liked, I will say I appreciated that there was a more age appropriate femme fatale in this version. I felt like this was a nice update because watching the first one recently I was like, Leslie Nielsen's like 70 in this movie, and Priscilla Presley's like 25.
Yeah, it even when I was younger, I was like, that doesn't seem right. He's old. And Pamela Anderson does great.
She's great.
I thought she was hilarious. Like she great delivery. She wasn't too cheesy, like over the top. Like I was surprised. She did great. I liked her.
Pam Anderson was really good here. She did a nice job playing it straight too, and keeping, you know, understanding the assignment. As she's walking away, I like this bit where he's doing voiceover narration about her, and then Paul Walter Hauser interrupts his voiceover narration, and like he's also doing voiceover narration while looking at her, and then it just goes over to all the cops, and they're all doing their own voiceover narration. That was a funny
I thought bit. That was a pretty good joke too. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
And then excuse me, sorry, there's what happens after this? He goes,
I can't remember either.
I think this is when he goes and meets Danny Houston.
Yeah.
Because he like, it's an electric car and he goes to meet him. Which
is it at the club that he meets him?
No, he meets him at his work.
Oh, right.
Like he goes, he goes in and the guy's like, free drink. And he passes him his coat. And the guy drops all the drinks, which was such like a great little bit. Like,
there's one person that says coat check, and there's one like coat check, free drink, and then he throws his coat on the drink person, and
he takes the tips and he drinks the change.
Yeah, he takes picks up the cup that says tips and drinks the change. Yeah, that was good. Yeah,
I thought that was just such a like those little jokes when they land like that,
and those are the physical bits, those physical comedy bits. Where it's like the timing and like playing it seriously is like so fun, you know, just like stupid gags like that. Like, you know, I love like in Airplane when, you know, the pilot who's heading out of his house to go check out, to go like help he's like getting ready and he's looking at himself in the mirror and he like puts on his sunglasses and his hat and then he walks through the mirror and like you realize that like the mirror like was a doorway. He's like, and then he like steps through the mirror. I'm just like, I love like little physical gags like that. Or like when he like shows up and like takes his sunglasses off and he's got another pair of sunglasses on underneath. Like
there was also one that Leslie Nielsen did where they're on a they walk through a door and Leslie Nielsen walks around the stage because it's just those I love.
They're
hilarious. But this was great. He meets Danny Houston and Danny Houston is like he was really funny in the scene that he talks about Fergie. They talk about the Black Eyed Peas.
Oh, I That was so good. Yeah.
That was so great.
He's just like, I don't play around about the Black Eyed Peas. And
yeah.
Like, neither do I. And then he's just like, Will I Am. And they start like saying, he's like,
yeah.
Don't forget Fergie. He's like, I'm not forgetting Fergie.
I never forget Fergie.
But like the fact that they're both, this is a great moment of like playing it really straight and being really goofy.
Yeah.
And this also feels like an updated modern Naked Gun.
Oh, joke, totally.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. And even the posters get more and more ridiculous. You know, it shows Danny Houston. He's there like with a car. And then he's like, at one point he's riding a lion with like a machine gun and like,
yeah,
those posters were great. This was, I thought this was a really funny scene, but he tells him to come to his Bengal club.
Yeah.
And
when do we see him presenting to his shareholders and he gives his evil plan? Has that already happened? Or
I don't think so. I think he, let's see. Okay. I think it's right after this. He goes in and he demonstrates all the evil billionaires.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's like, here's the plan. And it's the plan from Kingsman.
Yeah.
And it's the exact plot, but also it's not that different from the plot of the original Naked Gun movie.
Like, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
The first Naked Gun movie is a guy that has a mind control device and he makes people turn into assassins with a mind control device. This is basically what Danny Houston's character has, only it's the exact same device as Samuel L. Jackson's character from Kingsman.
Yes,
and again, like, I think that there's a world in which this movie is okay with just completely aping plot points and ideas from other films in this genre, because it's a spoof and a parody after all. But it still is a little bit like, I don't know, it comes off a little bit to me like I almost feel like it'd be funnier if they leaned more into this whole plot device aspect.
Yeah.
And if they just sort of like kept talking about the grand plan in more generalized platitudes, and leaned into like the, just like that, it does almost like, I think it could be a funny idea if the screenplay almost was like, it doesn't matter what the grand plan is,
right?
We're just gonna talk about it in this like generalized way film. I don't know, you know, some way to do it that feels a little more unique or a little, it was weird that it was just the exact thing from Kingsman.
Yeah. I also clocked that too. Just like, okay, this is strange. Like this is, but again, in this type of movie, like, and actually Kingsman, I love that movie. And the way that that all works out for that movie worked so much better than this.
Oh yeah. I mean, the church scene with Colin Firth is one of the best action scenes Matthew Vaughn's ever made.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like so fun. And to the point of ridiculous, like this movie.
Yeah.
But it was much more grounded. But I thought that
I will say in the final act of this film, I think this movie could have had more fun.
I agree. That's kind of why I was like, oh man, like Kingsman did it so much better.
I know.
Because they pushed that to the limit, also with the limit of being grounded.
Yeah.
And like, so I was kind of disappointed. Same thing as you, like, oh man, I feel like they could have done something. It was a little bit different, a little bit more original, because the other one did it better. But it's honestly such a small, like, it didn't ruin the movie for me, but I agree. I wish it could have been a little bit different. But and this plot device, which is the primordial law of toughness device.
Yeah.
That's what plot stands for. And when they turn it on, everybody freaks out and they start beating the crap out of each other. And it's kind of like, you know, survival of the fittest. People kill themselves. So that's the plot in
the plan is that they're going to turn everybody on each other and all the billionaires are going to go to an underground bunker and Weird Al's going to perform for them, which is also a reference to the first movie, because Weird Al Yankovic is in the first Naked Gun movie.
He's in all three, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So he's always in these movies.
So he's in every, now he's in this one. So
there's a funny thing. In the first one, there's a funny thing where Frank Drebin gets off of a plane and there's like all this press there and they're all like, you know, like they're taking photos and stuff. And then Frank Drebin gets in front of these microphones and he's like, well, I suppose you all want the story of how I took it, you know, and then his partner's like, Frank, no, they're not here for you. He's like, Weird Al Yankovic's on the plane. And then he gets off the plane. And he's like, hey.
Yeah. Hilarious.
Yeah.
And on this one, he's like, he's going to perform for all the billionaires and he'll be there, you know, he'll be their talent. Which did you stay after the
movie? Yeah.
Okay, great. So he's in it, which is really funny. And then at this point, again, what even happened?
I think we go to Frank's apartment, or they go to the club, the Bengal club. Yeah. And
or no, I think let's see.
I can't remember.
I think he does still go to the, I think he does go, he goes to the club.
Yeah. He goes to the Bengal club and Pamela Anderson's there, and she kind of distracts Danny Houston while he breaks into the back room because they're sort of working together because her brother somehow got tied up with Danny Houston's
character. Her brother's the one who died in the car accident.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so that's her involvement in the plot. But Liam Neeson does this, like he sneaks into the back room and they have some fun physical humor where he's like beating up the security guard in the background. And it's like, you know, and I know there's funny little gags in here, like him falling down the stairs while he's trying to sneak into the security room.
Yeah.
But I thought the funniest part of this scene was Pam Anderson's
scat.
Was her. Yeah. That was the funniest part of the scene to me.
I thought it was pretty hilarious too.
And again, it's like way to go, Pam Anderson, for like getting up there and like giving it her all.
Well, and what sells it too is Danny Houston. He's like, he is like totally enthused. He's like, oh, wow. Like he's amazed by it. And she's doing a horrible job.
I also love, she gets up on stage and she like turns around and talks to the band. And she's like, listen, boys, let's do some scrambled eggs and make it on the rusty side. And so like she says something like that. I can't remember what she, but all the musicians look at each other and they're like, what? and they're all just like, I don't know what she just said. And then she just starts like scatting and they're not even with her. And I thought that was funny too, that like rather than just having the band be like, we know exactly what you're talking about, the band's like, we have no idea what she's doing. And that she's going over to the bassist and being like, boom, 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 and like and doing all of the you know, I thought this was really, really funny, and that Danny Houston is totally enchanted by it. It kind of made me think of like, you know, when Topper does Only You in Hot Shots or something, you know, like, Only You, like you know, something like that, like I love when these movies get really ridiculous with these like
musical numbers.
But I thought what was funny about this one was like that it's actually bad, and she's just committing to it. And Danny Houston is completely enchanted by it.
Is
funny.
Well, and he finds out that her brother was talking to an investigative journalist.
Yeah.
And then I think the next day he goes to the apartment. He goes to the journalist's apartment, which he goes in and he's like, oh, I stepped on some red goo in here. And he looks and it's like, it says, pick up the knife. And it's a bloody knife, and he picks up the knife, and then it says, pick up the recorders, state record your name, and say, I did it.
This was one of those scenes where it was a little scary movie 3 or 4 for me. Like, it was, this scene to me, I was a little bit like, all right, this was like one of those moments where I was like, this isn't really landing for me. But
I thought this was pretty funny.
But it's like, it's totally right for this kind of movie where it's just like Frank Drebin's a total idiot. He's very he's getting framed for the murder of this journalist, and the framing is like really, really silly. And
And he goes in with the knife to the room, and the investigative journalist is dead, and he's like, oh no. And he like picks up he's like, I gotta get rid of the body. He picks it up and he he puts it up into the fan, and the fan cuts his head off.
And again, like, this is something where I was like, if we're going to do this bit, I kind of want more. Like, I want like full on, like Goodbye, Mr. Bunting, from SNL, you know, when, you know, the sketch where the kid stands, you know, Goodbye, Mr. Bunting, where Pete Davidson they're doing Dead Poets Society, and everyone stands on their desks like, I sing my song for all to hear. And then Pete Davidson stands on his desk and he's like, I sing my song for all, and the ceiling fan cuts his head off and like and just sprays blood all over the room. It's like, I felt like if we're gonna do this, if like the head of this guy's gonna get cut off, like it should like be a geyser where it's like spraying all over the room. He should like walk out of that apartment like drenched in blood, you know.
Honestly, that would have been PG-13. Like, if but I thought it was funny. It was, I mean, he throws the body at the cops that come in and he jumps out of the window, and
he does a classic Naked Gun bit where he's like, you know, front flipping
he's doing cartwheels and backflips. And he gets into his car, and his
electric car.
Electric car that,
was that, gifted to him by Danny Houston.
Yeah. Yes. Which he drives it. And then Danny Houston's like, oh, I have control of your car. Like, you know, and this is,
I like this scene. I thought this was funny. Yeah.
I thought this was pretty inventive because he shoots out the windshield and then like a clown is coming and he's like, get out of the way. And yeah. The clown moves, but all those balloons come into the car.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, not bees. And two beekeepers are walking a beehive across the street and the bees all come in the car.
Yeah.
And then this is where I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Two guys have a windshield that they're walking across.
Yeah.
And the windshield goes back onto the car.
Yeah. It's the classic bit of like two guys carrying a pane of glass. But the pane of glass they're carrying is the exact windshield for his car. And it just goes, sucks like, back up. Yeah. And then he's just back in the car. And I thought that was really funny. And then he gets the car to let him out. And
well, it shows Clippy. He's like, do you need some help? Which I thought was pretty funny. Yeah. He's like, open the doors. And he jumps out of the car. And the car goes into the ocean and he's on the run now. He's wanted.
Yeah. And I think he links back up with Pam Anderson's character and they wind up back at his apartment somehow. I can't remember how they link back up with each other, but they wind up back at his place. And I did like this, you know, they're back at his place and they're doing all this fun wordplay of how they're flirting with each other. And he does, you know, another classic Naked Gun bit where he takes his suit off by ripping it like this. And he's got different set of clothes. I think
this was actually a lot before.
This might have been earlier. Yeah. But I mean, I can't remember the order of how these things happen, but this is an important sequence in the movie because we do this whole Austin Powers gag where close the curtains and Kevin Durant is looking at them with like infrared binoculars. And it's like, it's just a straight up Austin Powers gag where he says that they can make a turkey, but his oven's dirty. Cleaning his oven and it looks like she's doing something else.
Yeah.
And then they're basting the turkey and it looks like something else is happening.
And then I couldn't
believe how far they took it with this dog.
I was surprised too.
I was like, dude, like no, too much with the dog. Too much.
And Kevin Durant's like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
It was the weirdest thing.
Yeah, they make it look like Frank Drebin is having sex with a dog.
Yes.
And it's but then this kicks off probably my favorite sequence in the entire movie, which is they go into kind of like he and Pamela Anderson are falling in love with each other.
They're together now.
And they go into a love montage, which this exists in the first film too, with Leslie Nielsen Leslie Nielsen and Priscilla Presley do a love montage that it seems like it lasts for like an entire week. Like they're like skipping on the beach and they're like, it, you know, they're all over the world. And then at the end, he's like, I can't believe we've only known each other for a day. And you know, like, and it's like a really funny bit, but in this one, they do a love montage that's set to, the song from Mannequin, and we can build this thing bridge together. This montage was my favorite. I was so happy about how they chose to do this. I was like, nice, nice guys. So
out of left field. It was great.
And this was a very like Akiva Schaffer like feeling SNL sketch kind of thing where they go to like a cabin in the woods, in the mountains where it's snowing and they have this romantic weekend in the cabins and they're doing all like, they're drinking wine and they're you know, but then all of a sudden they like pull out a book that says like magical spells and incantations and they're like doing spells and a snowman that they built earlier in the montage, like the spell that they're doing, like the magic goes out the window and brings the snowman to life.
Yeah.
And then they're having like three ways with them and the snowman.
Like they're biting off the snowman's hands, like they're eating the snowman.
They push him out of the three-way because they're like, no, we just want it to be the two of us. And the snowman like gets all mad and then he goes to like get like an axe or something to kill them because he's mad that he got pushed out of that. And then they have to like kill the snowman. They have to like
he's got a gun and like Liam Neeson's got nowhere to go, and then Pam Anderson comes up and chops his head off with a samurai sword.
Throws it in the hot tub.
Like totally takes this weird turn, which was I loved it too.
And
it
all, like, I love when something like this all happens just inside of one montage. And it's like, yeah, what are we talking about? Yeah. It's like in the Wet Hot American Summer when they're like, we got to go into town for supplies. And they go into town and they like get addicted to drugs and they're like living in a house doing heroin. And they're, and it's like all this montage where they're all like all shivering and like having like withdrawals from heroin. And then they come back to camp and they're like, can't believe we were only in town for an hour. <It's>
like, right. Those are great. This was definitely that they had the weekend together.
Yeah.
And basically at this point after that, this we're was kind all of in, early we're kind in of, the movie.
Yeah. But. I think so. I think when he gets back is when he gets framed for murder and is now on the run. And we're into like the third act of the film, which is, again, it's where the third act of the first one goes, which is the first one goes to a baseball game. But this one, so we go to like a UFC fight. But it's like we go to a sporting event.
Sports event. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And the plot device is in the balls. And he's the for New Year's Eve and they're supposed to drop. So he goes and he finds the balls and he's trying to get the plot device. He gets lowered down and his pants get pulled off and they're all they're all describing what it looks like, which was pretty, which this was a joke from the first one, I believe, and or something, because then we see Priscilla Presley and she's like watching it. Like,
I thought it was a weird cameo from her.
I agree. I thought she would say something.
I was kind of like, hey, if we're gonna bring Priscilla Presley into the movie, let's bring her in. It's also weird because I'm like, Priscilla Presley looks like she's not much older than Pam Anderson.
And, you know? And I agree. I was like, oh, I wish she would have said something.
Yeah.
But maybe she didn't want to. You never know. Maybe she was like, I'll just be watching. Like,
that's, yeah, who knows?
Who knows? But she's in that. He does get the plot device and he comes down and he starts beating everybody up. Like, you want to see a real man fight? And he kind of beats everybody, all the people who try to, you know, grab him, and he's got to go outside. He goes out and then the plot device kind of goes off and everybody starts beating everybody up, which I did think
explained why it didn't affect him. It didn't.
Oh, they did. He has a little thing in his ear.
Oh, it's because he's got,
he's got an earpiece in that like blocks out the frequency. And cause he's also, Danny Houston has it and they put him in Pamela Anderson's ears too. And
But this is, this action sequence where everybody is now, it's the thing where this frequency makes you crazy and makes you all fight each other. They did some fun stuff here. Like, you know, him doing the like sliding through and punching everyone in the wiener,
in the groin. Yeah.
You know, like over and over. Like, yeah, that's funny. And like, but I felt like this was an opportunity to just do like a lot more. And,
I agree.
Yeah, have a lot more fun.
Yeah, and they, but I did think Paul Walter Hauser is pretty funny because he beats up all these little kids.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, but that was a, everything
him like throwing these little kids like into like vending machines and stuff was funny. Yeah. And again, I think we could do more fun with like dolls and stuff like that where, you know, you're just like, if Paul Walter Hauser, if like you see like almost like Muppet heads that are like bouncing, just like picking them up and like throwing them. Like, I think like we could have, I don't know, like it felt like, you know, but, or like you could, I mean, it was funny in the 1988 movie, and it was crazy how socially relevant this still was. There's a gag in the baseball stadium where all of these different kinds of people are fighting each other, you know, all like, and two of them are like, it's like a rabbi and like a Middle Eastern looking like imam, and it's like a Palestine and Israel thing. And then when everything works out, they like look at each other and they hug and they like, you know, make up. And I'm like, you could have done bits like that where it's like different kinds of people are fighting each other. And then I think you could have done more with the reversal where everyone loves each other. And someone wearing like a MAGA hat, like fighting. Yeah. Some, you know, I don't know.
Someone, no, I totally agree. Yeah. That is also why it was a little disappointing, but I mean, we get to kind of the end, which Liam Neeson earlier in the movie's like, Daddy, just let me know that you approve of me. He's like,
maybe, this is good. I liked this a lot.
Yeah. He's like, maybe show me an owl. So that's at like the very beginning of the movie. And then he's like, oh, he can't catch up to the bad guys. But then he sees an owl. He's like, oh, Daddy. And then he's flying on the owl. And
the owl just carries him.
He's like, he's kicking the evil billionaires on their motorcycles.
Yeah.
And he like It's like, thanks, Daddy. And he's like, go get him. And he, the owl, which is Liam Neeson, because he's like, oh, good job, my son, you know, or whatever.
Leslie Nielsen. Yeah.
Sorry. Leslie Nielsen.
And the owl poops on Danny Houston and makes him crash. But then, yeah, the owl flies away and like screeches and it says the subtitle and it's like, I love you, son. And it's
like, that's pretty great.
This little owl puppet was funny and I'm glad that they just went stupid with it. But yeah, they have their fight scene, which we already talked about, where it's like really built up. And then all Liam Neeson does is just punches Danny Houston in the stomach once. Houston's just like, oh, my tummy. You know, like, and that's I thought that was really funny. But then I also really like this. They get the plot device and they get to the control of it, and it just says calm people, and it's set to calm people up, and then she switches it to calm people down. But it's funny that what it was set to was calm people up.
Because like, that was a joke earlier on. He's like, oh, what's the opposite of calming people down? He's like, calming people up. And that was a great joke.
The controller just says calm people up, down, and that you're calming them up is how they.
Yeah.
But again, there's this funny little, I felt like this bit didn't quite land for me in the middle of this conversation between him and Danny Houston. He all of a sudden becomes Dave Bautista out of nowhere.
Yeah. That was and a then, little, yeah. Yeah.
And then like Liam Neeson walks back on. He's like, thanks, Dave. Sorry. And he's like, oh, no problem. He's like, I just had to go to the bathroom. And it's just sort of like for a second, Liam Neeson had to go to the bathroom. So Dave Bautista stepped in for him. But it just felt like a joke that was like, it just kind of didn't feel like anything. It was just like, hey, it's Dave Bautista, everybody. Yeah. And I kind of thought maybe there's a better way to get Dave Bautista involved here. I don't mind bringing Dave Bautista in here, but maybe there's a better way to get him involved than just, it just felt like a joke that didn't quite
work.
But what I did like is then Dave Bautista's, he gets tackled by all these rage monster people. And then when they set the thing to calm people down, Dave Bautista's like hugging all the people that were like fighting him. And and again, I thought we could have done more with this. I thought we could have done like more comedy here of like when we change it to calm people down, like that people start making out with each other or something, you know? Like,
right.
Like we could have gone further with
you could have pushed it could have pushed it, but he's I also thought that joke didn't land because it was so, because I think he does say like thanks Frank stand-in, because I don't think maybe he did call him Dave, but like it almost would have been funnier if it was just some random person, like not anybody that we actually noticed that kind of looks like Liam Neeson,
right?
Like that probably, because the Dave Bautista was so like I didn't even I was like what. So yeah, it didn't really land, but
and it was just kind of out of nowhere, and it was just sort of it didn't feel. It was, the joke is Liam had to go to the bathroom, and Dave Bautista stands in for him for like 5 seconds, and it's like that's fine, and that's a very Naked Gun-esque bit. I just wonder if there's a way to like make it. Make it a runner, like make it throughout the film that different famous actors keep standing in for him at different moments, you know?
That would have been good, but it was fine. And, but it also, it definitely didn't land for me. Like it,
but basically, you know, they save the day. He and Pam Anderson are together at the end. And the movie just sort, it's like they get out of there. The movie ends, you know, it's like, and then we have bits throughout the credits. Cause of course we do.
Which actually they had a lot of, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no. I know you're going to say that. Yeah. But they have a song that plays over the credits where it's his song that he sings to Pam Anderson, which is also a reference. He talked about his wife that died earlier in the film where he's like, I sang her a song. I booked studio time, you know, like, and, but then it's this bit where he's like booking studio time to sing a song to Pam Anderson's character.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the song, he like goes and picks up a guitar. He's like, huh, what's this, a guitar? And then he starts playing it. He's like, and it's like, he's really good at it. He's just like, oh, this is easy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But also I think, you were going to talk about how in the credits, if you're paying attention, there are all these bits in the credits.
Yeah. And it's like Netflix password. And it was, I'm trying to remember.
It's saying different kind of grips. It's like key grips, you know, because grip is a role, but then it's like tennis grips. And it had like different kinds of tennis grips of like how you can grip your.
And it said set dressing, and it was ranch and Thousand Island. And
they had those. Set dressing, ranch.
Dressing.
It's
pretty funny.
Yeah. Lots of little bits in the,
In the credits, which were great, which the credits lasted forever. It felt like they took forever, but
it's because they had to add in a bunch of bits to the credits. Yeah.
They did. But then at the end, there's a post-credit scene and Weird Al Yankovic comes on and he's singing and he's like, hey, we're all the evil billionaires. He's like, oh, this sucks, or whatever he says, which is pretty funny.
But yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the end of the movie.
That's it. That's the Naked Gun 2025. Okay, let's get into our scores. If this is your first time watching our show, we score movies out of 10, 10 being the best. We give a technical rating. That's just for the craft of the filmmaking, the writing, the acting, the musical score, the special effects, the cinematography, all that stuff. We give a score for the ending, how well the movie wrapped things up and stuck its landing. We give a score for rewatchability. We give a score for cultural impact and significance. And we give a score for our subjective feeling about the film. Kramer, what is your technical rating for Naked Gun?
My technical rating is an 8. I thought they did what they set out to do. They made really stupid jokes. Some landed, like we said, some didn't, but also like the execution of the jokes was really good when it needed to be. You know, the dummy looked so stupid, but it also, I mean, it just fit.
It's supposed
like,
to.
Yeah, like, and it, so it all felt very, very well, and it was all done very well. They had a few original ones in there. They had some recycled ones. But again, like the score was really good and the acting was done very, very well. So they set out what they wanted to do. And I think they did it really, really well.
Yeah, my technical rating is a 7.5. Again, this is not, it's a deceptively tricky form to get right because it's so dumb that like you can very easily just accidentally make it too dumb.
Yeah.
And you have to be right on the line of being too dumb. You have to be, and it's a, and so that's why it's like, and with the amount of jokes you're putting into a script like this, I think the best you can hope for is like a 70 to a 75% success rate on those jokes. And you live with the ones that don't quite land because you're right on that line of like really, really stupid and cartoon, you know, and it's kind of like a live action cartoon, like a live action Looney Tunes episode. And you're sort of trying to thread that needle. And to me, the jokes worked about 70 to 75% of the time. Yeah. That's why I'm at 7.5. And also, I mean, I'd say the jokes worked like 70% of the time for me. And I give it an extra 0.5% bump for just like the difficulty of reviving a genre like this. And I think, you know, they cast it really, really well. Everybody did a really nice job handling the material and handling the tone. But, you know, there's definitely some things like structurally with the plot that I was kind of hoping for a little bit more originality. There's definitely some jokes that I saw more of an opportunity for them to hit harder than they did. And I'd be like, oh man, that's actually not a bad bit. So sometimes the execution was a little bit, it fell flat in moments where I was like, oh, that's a good bit, but you just kind of missed it. I thought having the plot be the exact thing from Kingsman, whether that's a commentary they're intentionally trying to make or not, if you're doing that, you almost need to be more overt with it and be, I don't know, but overall pretty good. 7.5 for me.
Yeah.
How about the ending?
The ending I gave a 7, which it was funny that Danny Houston joke got me still is funny now. But with the unoriginality of the everybody trying to beat them up and the better way that Kingsman did it is kind of where the docking comes. Cause I felt like they could have done it. They could have pushed it a little bit more, but still good.
That's where I'm at. I'm at a 6.5 for the ending, where I still had a great time. There were still a few bits that worked, but I did feel myself in the last stretch of this movie kind of going like, all right, I think I'm ready. Actually, I think I'm all kind of laughed out. And that's not how you want to feel at the end of, you want a movie like this to leave you wanting more. Like you want it to be, you want the things to be hitting. And I even felt this way about the original when I rewatched it recently. During the last stretch in the baseball game, I was kind of going like, come on guys, wrap it up. Yeah, like the baseball game goes on for a while. There's this whole prolonged stretch where Leslie Nielsen is pretending to be the umpire and he does all these bits and the bits go on for just like a little too long where it's like, guys, let's get to it. And I feel like, in a movie like this, where it's just rapid fire jokes and bits and you kind of, once the audience can feel that we're in the home stretch, you kind of just got to put your foot on the pedal and get to it. Yeah. And I also felt like the bits that they did have, they could have hit harder than they did in the ending. So the ending was a tad of a letdown, still enjoyed it. 6.5 for me. Nice. How about rewatchability?
Rewatchability, I gave an 8 because not that I'd want to watch this movie from beginning to end all the time, but I could watch, you could watch this movie, pick up anywhere you want, and it would be funny. And I think the jokes, I mean, we'll see how long, you know, it lasts, but I think most of these jokes are pretty timeless. A lot of them are pretty timeless. So I think it will be funny to continue on. So I gave it an 8. Yeah.
Yeah. I gave it a 7 on rewatchability just because when I revisit Hot Shots or Hot Shots Part Deux or The Naked Gun or Airplane, like these jokes, they always work. This, when the ones that land always land. And so this is going to be a movie, I think, that's going to be one that future generations can come back to and that you can always put on as just like a simple, easy, good time watch at any time. So yeah.
Yep.
How about cultural significance and impact?
Cultural impact, I gave a 7. Actually, I should probably give it a 7.5 because we're going to see if it revitalizes this genre. And I think it could, and it is really funny. Like it's introducing a whole new demographic of people to this type of comedy, which hasn't been around for a long time. So I think it will have a good impact, but we'll see.
That's exactly what I said. I gave it a 7 for that same exact reason. It's a genre that's been kind of dead for a while. The question was, are they going to manage to bring it back and make it work? And I think that the answer to that question is, for the most part, yes, they did.
Yeah.
This is a movie that almost certainly will get a sequel. I don't know how I feel about that right now, but I think it's kind of inevitable.
Yeah.
Especially if the movie continues to do well in the box office, which the reviews that it's getting, I think it will do well enough to get a sequel. And we'll see if they can sort of, there might be a little bit of a revitalization of this style of comedy. We'll see. How about your subjective score for this film?
My subjective score is an 8, and it might be a little tainted because it's like, I have wanted a movie like this for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm glad that they just went for it and they did it. So, and I had a great time. The jokes landed and I was laughing pretty much the whole time. So I loved it.
Yeah. I gave this movie a 7.
Nice.
And I had a blast. I was really happy that for the most part, things were working. I just dock points for me subjectively for all the reasons I mentioned while we were chatting, where it's like, there's just certain bits that I would go, oh man, that could have been really great.
Yeah.
Or there's certain bits that to me, I was like, you know what? You guys took a big swing there and I'm not sure that one is right. Or things that felt aped from other franchises that I personally don't know that this Austin Powers whole sequence works at like altogether. Like it's so specific to, it's such a like Mike Myers, like it's not a Naked Gun or Airplane thing. Like it's a Mike Myers bit.
Yeah. And that one, and it went on a little too long.
Yeah. And they went to a place with it too, where I was like, I don't know, guys. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But overall, I really enjoyed the film. Liam Neeson was great. Pam Anderson was great. They did a nice job. So, what did you guys think about The Naked Gun? Let us know in the comments if you had a good time with it. And if you want to follow along with the podcast, we will be watching Weapons next. We're going to be taking a hard turn into a very different genre. But this movie has a lot of hot buzz coming out before its release. And so that's what we're going to be seeing next. Go check it out in the theaters if you want to watch along with the show. Weapons is what's up next. And like, share, comment, subscribe, all of those good things so that we can keep the show growing. Thank you for watching. And we'll see you next time.
See you later.